Do you ever find yourself having to make decisions you wish you didn't have to make every day? I have a mentor, his word to me constantly was, Ben, the easiest decisions in life are the ones that are made for you. Even if I didn't like the decision, I think he's onto something. But have you ever been that place where you're just having to make choices that you just would rather not make? Have you ever found yourself at a restaurant and you went in hoping, because it was a new place for you, you were hoping to find one thing you liked on the menu, you're a little bit of a picky eater, but as you began to scroll through the menu, you're like, oh my gosh, it all sounds amazing, I don't want to have to choose. You ever been there? Now, if you have a significant other, you need to learn. You order two different things. If you're the guy, you get 75% of it and just roll on from there. But I think it's that kind of dilemma that led to the invention of the buffet. It had to be, right? And then some of you single ladies, you deal with this in your dating life. Like, you don't want to have to make choices. You have found two incredible guys who are pursuing you, and you've figured out a way to date them both. You've got your Monday, Wednesday, Friday guy. Ladies, make a choice. Make a choice for all things sanity. Make a choice between one of those two guys. But sometimes you're in a job seeking season, you're looking for new work, and you know, you can have a day where you wake up and you're like, oh, there's no opportunities. And that very same day before you go to bed, you might have two compelling offers from companies that are both on your dream list. And you're like, I don't want to have to choose. Here's what I see as I observe. Anybody just in life right now, I'm seeing a lot of chuckles, which maybe there's, my pants are zipped, but maybe there's something happening in your lives that I don't know about. But anybody in a place in life right now where you're just having to make some choices, anybody that you wish you didn't have to make? I've got friends whose daughter is going to be making a college choice soon. So anybody making employment decisions? If you're on the staff team at Epic, don't raise your hand because I'll lose my concentration. But we hate having to make choices. And if I'm honest, let me pair it this way to say what I'm observing in not only my life, but even in the world around me, in San Francisco and in our church. Here's what I think is true. It sounds kind of crazy, but right now I see this. We love having options, but we hate making choices. Just think about that for a moment. We love having options. We hate making choices. We're in relationship with even our church partners through the Hope Project, that some of whom have lived under communism. And there was a time in which they enjoy freedom in a way that I could not, because I'd never have known what it's like to be under communism. But in 1989, when that kind of communism fell in Romania, they are able to enjoy a freedom that I can't enjoy. They're like, we'll make choices all day long. Right? But for so many of us, we love having options. We hate having to choose between really, really great options. And so what we tend to do is this, we tend to want it all. And I think there's even this sense in which our world tries to promise us everything. And let's be honest, I think right now in history, and I haven't lived in any other era, and you might think I belonged in some other place with the Vikings or something, but I haven't lived in any other era in history, but I do believe this is true today. Because we can do so much more today than we ever could do, some of us are more tempted, I think, historically, to buy the lie that we can have it all more than any generation before us. And especially if I'm just real honest, not in an elitism way, but here in San Francisco, because of all the innovation that comes from here and everything that's happening and every promise that's being made, we really tend to believe that we might can have it all. Like, we can have it all, we can be it all, we can own it all, we can experience it all, because the world breathes this message into our lives that you actually don't have to have any limits. You can have it all. But can we? Can we really have it all? Can we really be it all? I love the title of this series, You Can Have It All, and obviously it's a little bit of a play on words. And how I want you to be thinking throughout this series that we're doing over the next 4 weeks is, are you going to really allow the world to promise you can have it all and to pursue things in your life on the basis of that? Or what if we could shift it, same phrase, just shift from who it's from and who it's to? What if we could begin to say to God, here's my commitment to you. God, you can have it all. You can have it all. You can have my life. You can have my relationships. You can have my kids. You can have my future. You can have my church community. You can have my work. You can have my productivity. You can have my influence. You can have my network of relationships. You can have my marriage. Jesus, you can have my uncertainty. You can absolutely have it all. What would that look like? It pairs nicely with our vision around here, which is this. The vision of Epic Church is to see an increasing number of people here in San Francisco orient their entire lives around Jesus. We don't have this because we couldn't have incorporation without a great vision statement. We don't have this because our friends who designed our website they're like, Ben, we really need a vision statement. We have this as our vision statement because we believe this is the life God's created us to live. If there's a phrase in that vision statement for this particular series, you can have it all. It's the two words, entire lives. Entire lives. Because we're awesome at giving some things to God, most of us. Right? I'm like, God, here's my Sunday. God, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with my life. Here's my career decision. If you'll just tell me, I'll take it back once you tell me, and I'll do it my way. But if you'll just, right? We're really good at giving some things to God. But what this whole idea of the series is, let's push all of our chips to the center of the table. Let's say to him, Jesus, if you're only worthy of 10% of my life, you're not worthy. Jesus, if you're only worthy of 80% of my life, if you're only good for Sundays, if you're only good for relationships, if you're only good for my uncertainty, and you can't handle the whole of my life, what am I doing? Because we think all of life is meant to be sacred, and if you're going to spend the majority of your waking life in your vocation, what you get paid to do, and the time and energy you spend when you don't get paid, then your faith needs to inform your vocation. Would you agree? If it doesn't, who needs a Sunday-only faith, right? So we have the value around here. Vocation is sacred. Vocation is sacred. And let me tell you where we're going over the next 4 weeks. I think you'll find some of these topics interesting. Next week, I'm going to give a talk around how you can know your God-given purpose and how you can lean into that God-given purpose. And a talk I'm calling Whatever. Week 3, we will look at what does it look like to take your Sunday faith into your Monday through Friday reality in a message we're calling Wherever. See if you can guess the next one. And then we'll wrap the series up by looking at how do you stay faithful to God in any season, when you're winning and when you're losing, when you're the intern and when you're the executive, when you are entering retirement and when you're starting your career, when you're getting the funding and when you're declaring bankruptcy, when you're filled with clarity and when you're in the midst of confusion, vocationally speaking. And that message will be called Whenever. But today, so that's where we're headed. Next 3 weeks after today, whatever, wherever, whenever. But guys, we've got to start with the first one, whoever. Whoever. I know if you're like me, Ben, let's just dive deep into the purpose conversation. If I'm honest, that's what I love to talk about more than anything else, and most of you know it, and most of you give me that nauseated look when I start talking about it. I love talking about purpose. I would love just to get into it, and we will get into it. Because I thought whoever has to go first, whatever's right after it, okay? We're going there next week. Join us online or right here in person. But here's why we have to talk about whoever first. It is better to become the right kind of person while having the wrong vocation than to be the wrong kind of person while having the right vocation. Now, they're not disconnected. It's not that you choose one, but if you don't get first things first, you're going to be in bad trouble. Think about it like this. Here's how I'll prove it to you for yourself. It's always good to see other people's example, and then you're like, oh, maybe that's true for me. Think about how many people that you work with or you observe, even here in San Francisco, Bay Area, whatever, and when you see them living out their vocation, you have no doubt that they are doing exactly what God created them to do. Do you know these people? But when you look at their character, you're like, whoa. Sometimes my friends and I, a lot of you who are here in this room, we'll talk about, hey, can you imagine if so-and-so in San Francisco gave their life to Jesus, what that would look like? Because you observe the work they're doing, you're like, I know they were created to do this. My gosh, they are innovating in such incredible ways and influence flows out of their life. Imagine if they became the right kind of person. And it's not that you and I have to choose between being the right person or doing the right vocation, but if you have to choose, be the right kind of person. You know, the world will tell us all of these things. They will tell us, work on your skill set. They will tell us, grow your core competencies. They will tell us, you need to become more productive. And if you know me, you know I'm all for those things. But when is the last time someone out there asked you to work on your character, the essence of who you are? How many of you work at a company where you're like, you know, Ben, they actually don't care about my productivity at all. All they want to do is know about my character. I'm assuming no one, right? And not even here at Epic would that be true. We care more than just about your character, but we want to care about your character for sure. Let me ask you a question that you don't need to answer out loud, but I really want you to think of it. If you had to choose, would you choose to be known as someone great or to actually be someone great? It's a really interesting question. If you think about it, if you had to choose, would you want to be known as someone great or to actually be someone great? You're like, Ben, how would I answer that question? I just want you to think about the last week, the last month, all of 2019, almost a quarter of the way in, where are you spending the bulk of your time, energy, and effort? Anybody feel guilty right there besides me? Right? Because I can spend all of my time trying to project a particular kind of person to the world, or I can become a particular kind of person for the sake of the world. Right? I can live however I want to the other 167 hours. I mean, not really, but I'm just saying. And as long as I get up here and I project something to you, you're like, Ben, great sermon. Wow, you're amazing. Da, 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 da. I mean, nobody's ever told me any of those. But I can live for that affirmation. Because the great temptation when it comes to your vocation is you know you will be affirmed for appearing to be a certain kind of person. Oftentimes, you'll give your effort to that because you know that's what wins the day, and you will actually neglect who you truly are and who you could become. Now, all of us deal with this to different degrees, but I want you to imagine, what if you could just, let's think 2 hours a week. Let's assume that you spend 2 hours a week, and I don't know how to get the consumption of energy into like real terms. So just imagine you're spending 2 hours a week and a lot of energy and a lot of effort trying to project who you are to the world. Imagine if you took those 2 hours and instead you actually became a particular kind of person for the sake of the world. Just 2 hours a day. Somebody do the quick math. What are we into for the year? Come on, easy math, guys. Come on, teacher friend. 2 hours a day, it's not a leap year, 365 days. All right, genius, it's 730. And I'm not doing that on, like, that's not even my notes. But just imagine, over 700 hours becoming someone. Rather than making sure you have the right filter to pretend like you are someone. Now, I'm not saying get rid of Instagram. Otherwise, I wouldn't know what you guys ate last night. I'm not saying don't doctor up your LinkedIn profile. You need it. Just be honest about it. But sometimes we have so much time invested in trying to project something to the world that we actually forfeit becoming who God wants us to become. Dallas Willard, the great author and philosopher who's no longer alive, he said this: the most important thing in your life is not what you do, it's who you become. And again, I could ask you, do you think that's true? But just where do you and I spend the bulk of our time? The most important thing in your life, Ben, the thing I always want to talk about and the thing I'm talking about more than, I'm always thinking like, okay, the most important thing in my life is what I do. What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? And it's important what you and I do. That's our whole message for next week. But guys, are we thinking at all about who we're becoming? In his book, The Contemplative Minister, which is a great read and not just for ministers, Ian Cowley writes this: the value of what we do will flow directly from who we are. So it's not that you choose to become someone great or you choose to do something great. Everybody's clear on that, right? But first things first, I think if you become the right kind of person, chances are you will do the right kinds of things. Does that make sense? But you can do the right kinds of things while never becoming the person God created you to be. Right? Now, I'm the person that rolls out of bed going, what do you want me to do today, God? But I first need to ask a primary question and then get to that secondary one. God, who do you want me to become today? Which begs the question for us to ask ourselves today. And it's a big, loaded question, but I want you to give weight to it, not just in this moment, but in the week to come. Who are you becoming? Who are you becoming? You're like, Ben, I'm becoming the number one sales guy at my tech company. No. That's what you're doing. Who are you becoming? And the reason that question is so important, whoever you become, that's all you take with you anywhere. Whoever you pretend to be, that's one thing, but you never actually take that person with you. Whoever you become, that's who you take into your dating relationship. Whoever you become, that's who you take into being a mom or dad to your children. That's all you got. Whoever you become, no matter what you pretend to be or what you pretend to know in this Epic Church community, you only enter into this community with who you are. And when you go to the office every day, the only person you take with you is the actual person you happen to be. Who are you becoming? Now, I know this is true for all of us, so I want everyone to raise their hand when I ask this following question. How many of you have ever thought about career trajectory? How many have ever gone a day without thinking about career trajectory? We think about career trajectory all the time, right? But how often do we think about character trajectory? When it comes to career trajectory, here's what we do, or here's what you should do. This is free consultation. Pay me later. Career trajectory, here's where I want to be in my career. Everybody said some version of that, right? It could be retirement, that's your career trajectory. Doing nothing, career trajectory, being the partner, associate, whatever. So what you do is you look at where you want to get to in your career, you look at where you are today, and then you figure out how to close the gaps. Everyone knows the system, right? That's why you went to college. You didn't learn anything maybe, but that's why you went to college. So you close the gap. How do I close the gap between where I am and where I want to be? Well, I grow my skill set. I learn things. I get a mentor. I get a life coach, whatever that means. I get an executive coach, right? I get all of these people in my life. I get better at something, and all of a sudden, I can keep closing that gap till I become this. Imagine if we approach who we are and our character in the same way. Guys, this would be genius. My character trajectory, I want to get here. I want to become this person. I want to be filled with the fruit of the Spirit. I want to have joy and peace and love and gentleness and kindness. And oh my gosh, I would know I got there when I get patience. Anybody else? I want to get there, but here's where I'm at today. What if we thought about character trajectory in the same way? I'm going to close that character gap. I'm going to get someone who's further along in their faith than me. I'm going to be engaged in my small group. I'm going to start some spiritual practices. I'm going to start trusting God with my finances. I'm going to close that character gap. Imagine what would happen if we close the character gap, because I'm so convinced that we push aside the stuff that's most important to go after the things that are pretty important, but not most important. Again, you guys, we have it as a value. I feel like I have to keep kind of giving the disclaimer that we really care about what you do. But who you are is actually who you will take into what you do. Who are you and who are you becoming? And then what's in the middle of your life? Like, what's at the center of your life? The most dangerous lie that I think I see so many people in our community here, and even myself buying into at times, is this lie. The best life I can live is one in which I'm at the center of it. Now, let me tell you what that means in totality. Sometimes when you hear that, you think, Ben, yeah, I'm just making, my life is awesome. It's all about me. I know that's bad, whatever. That's the lie. Okay. But guys, what I also see in our community is when people are in a bad space, they make their lives even more about them. Anybody ever been there? Right? I'm feeling anxious. I'm feeling depressed. Do I make my life about other people in that time? And one of the things I want to say, I don't know who this word is for, and I don't usually do this, so here it comes. Some of you will get healed if you will just take your eyes off yourself for a moment. I believe that that's from God. Some of you, your healing is on the other side of your self-centeredness. Okay, there it is. Now back to what I did know I was going to say. I just believe that. I believe that, but we believe the lie that if we'll put ourselves in the middle, put ourselves at the center, everything will go well. But tell me this, is that best for people around you in your life that you put yourself at the center? Everybody knows the answer, right? Of course it's not. But let me tell you something that you might not know. I now want to appeal to your most selfish ambition. Putting yourself at the center isn't even best for you. It's not even best for you. You can't hold the weight of that spot. And it doesn't work out. I'm gonna give you two quotes today from probably my favorite book, Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. Here's the first one. I want you to think about it. Lewis writes, "The moment you have a self at all, there is a possibility of putting yourself first." We all know this. Wanting to be the center. Wanting to be God, in fact. That was the sin of Satan, and that was the sin he taught the human race. Now, some of you know what I'm about to teach you. Some of you don't know, but I think it's an eye-opening thought. Satan did not become Satan because he was hell-bent on being evil. Satan became Satan because he was hell-bent on being God. It should be mind-blowing. If you are a Christian, you knew that, and it especially should blow your mind. Like, he didn't become the devil by being a bad guy. He didn't become the devil by wanting to destroy humans. It started with him wanting to be the center. And you're like, Ben, are you saying that if, you might. So your trajectory with yourself at the center, where might that lead? I can't tell you for sure, but I'm guessing nowhere good. I want to give you two verses today, Matthew chapter 16. 24 and 25, it's on the app. You have a Bible maybe, stand with me. I just want to read two verses, and here's what I want you to think about as I read them. Matthew 16, verse 24 and 25. I love speaking on so many topics around here, but today really is about deciding who is the whoever you're going to be. And I want you to hear from Jesus, his promise. You get to opt into which whoever you'll be, but you have to live with the implications of that. Here's what Jesus says. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it." You may be seated. Okay, I know that was really short. You're like, really, Ben, just two verses? If we go the right path on this text with the offer Jesus is making to us, everything changes. I want you to think about the phrase that's the title of this series, "You Can Have It All." The word "whoever," the title of today's talk, it shows up three times in these two verses. Jesus says, "Whoever wants to be my disciple." Now again, remember, we love options. You remember that? That was just like 8 minutes ago or 12. We love options. So what we want to do is go, "Hey Ben, I do want to be considered a Christian, but I don't want to be one of those disciple guys or girls." That doesn't exist. Everybody understand that? So Jesus gives us two options in verse 25, right? He says, whoever wants to follow me, but yeah, he does that first. And then he goes on and he says, whoever wants to save their life will lose it. Whoever loses it for me will find it. We want to know, is there a third option? Jesus, can I give you my life when that's convenient and then take it back when I want it back, right? You can have it all. Jesus says, if you want the world to say this to you, if you even want God to say this to you, you can have it all. However you want to play this out, he says, you think you're holding on to your life, but in the end, you're going to lose it completely, what you actually want as life. He said, but if you are willing to lose it, not just aimlessly. Guys, becoming a Christian, which some of you are going to do, maybe even before we leave this room, becoming a Christian isn't about just going, well, I've got to give up all that I ever wanted and I don't get anything in exchange and it's just aimless and I'm like, oh, I've got to just be, you know, not enjoy anything in life. It's not that. He's like, if you will lose it for me, in other words, if you lose it to me, you'll find it. I told you two C.S. Lewis quotes from Mere Christianity. Let me tell you how the entire book ends. Maybe I'll just read the book one series. Like, just read it, the chapter. These are the sentences, several of them, but this is the very end of Mere Christianity. Everything that Jesus is saying in Matthew 16, Lewis is essentially repeating in a different phrase. He says, "Give up yourself and you will find your real self. Lose your life and you will save it. Submit to death, death of your ambitions and favorite wishes every day, and death of your whole body in the end. Submit with every fiber of your being, and you will find eternal life. Keep back nothing. Nothing that you have not given away will be really yours. Nothing in you that has not died will ever be raised from the dead. Look for yourself, and you will find in the long run only hatred, loneliness, despair, rage, ruin, and decay. But look for Christ, and you will find him, and with him, everything else thrown in." Counterintuitive. Whatever in you that hasn't died will not be able to experience resurrection. There's a three-word sentence Lewis gave us. I want to put it back on the screen and isolate it so you see it. Had everything to do with the "You Can Have It All" series. He said what? Keep back. It's like the only way you get in on what God wants to offer you is if you and I push all of our chips to the table and go, okay, you can have it all, Jesus. You can have my life. You can have my work. You can have my relationships. You can have my uncertainty. You can have my anxiety, because I remember you said, cast my anxiety upon you because you care for me. You can have my kids. They're getting on buses around the city. I can't control that, obviously. Jesus, would you have it all? Would you have it all? Over 300 times in the Bible, you will encounter this word "whoever." And the good news about this word "whoever" is it literally means whoever. It means the rich and the poor, the young and the old, the man and the woman, the boy and the girl, the person who has a shady past and the one who has a fairly clean slate in their past, the one who's had faith their entire life and the one who hasn't yet to embark on this journey of faith, whoever. And it starts "whoever," and then it says something like this: whoever believes or whoever acts or whoever does gets blank. And I would encourage you just to go back and read some of those. And you can count on those promises. They're inevitable conclusions. Jesus will say, whoever does this gets this, and whoever does that or doesn't do this gets the other thing. Let me give you two of them, he said, or just what the scriptures say. John 7:38, Jesus said, whoever believes in me, as scripture has said, rivers of living water will flow from within them. Even if you don't know what that is, I think you can get at what he means. This is Jesus talking. He knows that he created us in such a way that all of us are born with thirst. And what do you do when you're thirsty? You find something to quench your thirst. And every person in this room is going to go after something this week that we believe is going to quench our thirst. Right? For me, I'm just looking at my weather app going, I need some sunshine. I need some more sun. I need some, right? Help me out. But you're looking to something. You're looking to a relationship. You're looking to the stock going public, and then you will have your thirst quenched. You're looking to some sense of pleasure, or the boss telling you you've been promoted, or here's a bonus, or you hit your targets, or whatever. What are you looking to? Jesus said, whoever believes in me, rivers of living water will flow from within him. We can assume that the opposite is true also. Whoever refuses to receive my invitation, they're not going to experience the living waters I created them to receive. Here's another one, 1 John 5:12. This was written by John, who was known as the beloved disciple of Jesus, the one whom Jesus loved. Now, interestingly enough, he gave himself that title, so however that works. Here's what he said. Again, he only gives us two options. There's not a third one. You're in one of these two parts of the sentence. He who has the Son has. He who does not have the Son of God does not have. One or the other. And when I say one or the other, I mean two things. One is, for a person who's placed their faith in Jesus, they're in the has life camp. The other person isn't. But also, you can be a Christian and not access the life that Jesus wants to give you and fill you with. Which camp are you in? You see, we get to this place where we say, if I can buy a house in San Francisco, I'll have life. If the stock goes public, we're gonna have more than life, right? If she says yes, life. If I get the housing situation, life. If the church grows, oh, then we've got life, and Jesus is going over and over and over and over. No. Those things actually in the end won't bring life in and of themselves, but no matter what your circumstances are, my life is given to you so that you might find life. You might find life. Here's the popular myth so many people buy into. The myth is this: you can become whoever you want to become. But if you heard Atul's focus announcement, he thinks Will's got him on the basketball court because he can't just become whoever he wants to become. That's a myth. The actual truth, though, is this: you can become whoever God wants you to become. You are limited. God is not limited. Whoever he destined you to become, whoever created and designed for you to become, you actually can become that person. So often we think about all the things we aren't or can't do in our lives, but can you look back and just reflect on your life for a moment and say, I think I can for sure. God, I never thought I would ever get to do fill in the blank. You can become whoever he wants you to become. And so we're pushing our chips to the middle of the table and saying, Jesus, I want to become whoever you want me to become. Here's why. Jesus, whoever I become, that's who I take into my role as a husband. Jesus, whoever I become, that's who I take into my relationship as their dad. Jesus, whoever I become, that's the only pastor Epic can have, the actual person I become, right? That's the only person you can take to work with you, who you become. And hear this, whoever you become, that's the only person you will take with you into eternity. Somebody said, rewind, pastor, that sounded really good. Whoever you become, don't miss this. Whoever you are, that is the only person you will take with you into eternity. So who are you becoming? Now, if you look at Jesus' offer of this life, it seems like if you take his offer, you'll lose your freedom. Doesn't it seem like that? I mean, who gets excited and go, take up your cross, and everybody's like, yes, right? Deny yourself. Who has a daily habit of denying themselves? Now, I mean, listen, I told myself, made a commitment, I was gonna give up chocolate leading up to Easter. And then my friend Cecile last week, she made an entire tin of fudge and gave it to me. What do you do in that moment? Do you stick with your disciplined commitment, or do you wanna be a good steward of someone else's gift? Here's how I've been balancing it. I've been putting two pieces of fudge in my oatmeal every morning. Just like healthy. God didn't tell me to. I'm just saying, it's been a good compromise. We think we'll lose our freedom if we get all in with Jesus and push it all to the center of the table. But let me tell you, you actually will lose some freedoms. But let me tell you how to think about it by giving you some real life examples. If you get married, do you lose some freedoms? Husbands, don't say it with a lot of gusto. Just say, yes. If you bring children into this world, do you lose some freedoms? Yes. If you become deeply connected in this epic church community, do you lose some freedom? Yeah, you lose the freedom of autonomy, right? Now we're gonna ask you how you're doing with that thing you told us was a struggle. If we don't know you, we can't ask you about it. But when people who are in healthy versions of marriages and family life and healthy versions of being deeply connected here at Epic Church, do you think people say, yeah, I'm married, I just lost so many freedoms? No, if they're in a great marriage, they're like, I'm so amazed that I was so glad to give that up so that I could get something much better. That's what Jesus is offering. You will not talk about your relationship with Jesus. Yeah, I just lost all my freedoms. You got something much better. And I would even say you encountered a greater freedom. Keller, in his book, Making Sense of God, writes this: if we try to live for anything else, it leads to slavery. But when we begin to live for God and follow his will, we find that we are actually becoming who we were meant to be, realizing our original design. All Jesus is going after today, all I'm trying to contend for today, is just to become whoever he created you to be. Just become whoever you were created to be. You can become everything he created you to become. But the last question you might have today is like, Ben, in any strong relationship, both sides have to give. Agreed. So Ben, you're telling me, tell Jesus he can have it all, go 100% in with him, push all of my chips to the center of the table. Is he doing any giving himself? Great question. Paul said it this way when he wrote to the churches in Galatia in Galatians 2:20. He said, I've been crucified with Christ. I gave myself up. I no longer live, that he's talking about his old life, but Christ now lives in me. The life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God. Who finished that? Who loved me and gave himself for me. We're like, oh man, what am I gonna get if I go all in? And will Jesus even respond to me? Listen, before you ever said to Jesus, you can have it all, he said to you, you can have it all. Loved you and gave himself for you. Your vocation will not give itself for you. Your pastor, even if he could give himself for you, it wouldn't matter in the way that you need someone else who can give themselves for you in a way that brings you the life you were created to embrace. The life we lost in the garden can be restored to us in the here and now and certainly to come. Or you can keep playing the same game. I can keep going, oh no, God, I think I know what's best. Guys, you're in one of those whoever camps. If you're not a Christian, you can be the person walking out this room with life today. The one who asks you to give up what you think is life is ready to exchange you with an even better life that's abundant and eternal. But for some of us who actually have faith in Jesus, we're living as though something else has to produce life for us and that he's not enough. I know I do that too many times. And so today, here's what I'm gonna do. I ask you just to take a posture of prayer. If you close your eyes, for those of you in the room, we've seen this response already throughout today, just seeing people embracing faith in Jesus. We don't do this every week, but today, especially with this message, this offer from Jesus, we wanna give you an invitation to say, Ben, today, I'm becoming part of that whoever has the Son of God has life. If today you're at a place where you are ready for the first time really in your life to say, Jesus, here's my life. You can have it all. Would you just lift a hand so I can pray for you? It's awesome. It's incredible. Yesterday we had our Alpha retreat and just seeing men and women offering their lives to Jesus for the first time. Yeah, just keep those hands up. And all you need to do is pray this. Jesus, you said to me with your life on the cross and your death that you gave it all for my sin. And today I'm saying to you, I want to give you my life. I want to give it all. If that's you, welcome to the family. Super pumped for you and what's ahead. And we'd love to know about that just so we can help you become who you were created to become. You can mark something on your card or the app. You can just email simply ben@epicsf.com. I'd love to celebrate that with you. You can tell us in the lobby. But those of you who are people of faith, what are you living as though is life-giving? What are you looking to and saying, my life will only be really abundant if I get this or that? Jesus says, like, hey, why don't you let go of that grip? Why don't you lose your life for him? Tell him he can have it all. Push those chips to the center of the table and say, Jesus, here I am. Jesus, we want to say that to you. We want to build our lives on what is solid, and we can't do that as long as we have a grip on our own lives. Lord, would you help us to surrender, to take our fingers off of our lives and say to you, Jesus, we're putting our lives in your hands, and we're going to allow you to be responsible for what results from it. Jesus, I pray that you would correct what needs to be corrected, that you would compel us to become the kind of whoever that you created us to be. After all, that's the only person we will take into any environment in this world and into the next. Would you stand with me? These guys are going to lead us in a song in just a moment, and I want to just tell you where the song comes from. Jesus said at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, he said there were two people who built houses, and on the outside, both houses looked the same. You wouldn't have known any difference, but there was a day where the storm came and the winds blew and the floodwaters began to rise. And he said, the one who built his house on the sand, that home was destroyed. It didn't have anything constant. It didn't have the right foundation. But the person who built their house on the rock, it endured the storm because it had anchored itself to something that wasn't going to go away regardless of the circumstances that came in. And every one of us in our lives, we are building it on something. And all I want to ask you today is this: whatever you're building your life on, can it handle the storm? Can it handle the pink slip at the office? Can it handle the bad health report? Can it handle when the stock doesn't go public and you have to shut the company down? Can it handle it? Jesus is saying, if you will lose some freedoms, I will give you a greater freedom. But you've got to be really clear on what you're going to build your life on. So let's declare this as Paul leads.